Hello, and welcome to another edition of Kaleidoscope. This is Magda Zenon, recording from downtown Nicosia, and with me in my virtual studio, I have two awesome women from the Birth Forward NGO. I have Yoli Orfanidi Etekleos, who is the spokesperson of Birth Forward, and Yota Dukanari, who is the president of the board of directors. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you, Magda.
Thank you for having us, Magda.
Which one of the two would like to give me just a little bit of an introduction about what Birth Forward does? I know, but let's reintroduce your NGO to the public.
I can't say a few things, and Yoli cannot, because Yoli has been with the organization much longer than me. It's a grassroots organization. It started in 2015 from a group of women that realized the need for an organization such as Birth Forward. Eline Pedersen was the initiator, who started everything, I think. Yoli can say more about Eline. She was a true visionary. And
she
saw the need for a change in culture, in birth culture in Cyprus. That's, I think, the main thing we are trying to do.
Yeah, Eline brought together, both active and passionate parents, together with health professionals who really wanted to see a change in the perinatal culture in Cyprus. Together we are here to inform and empower people so that they know what their rights are when it comes to the whole spectrum of becoming a parent, fertility, giving birth, early parenting.
But you also do work to affect policymakers, don't you?
Yes.
You do a bit of advocacy. You do advocacy as well.
It's also part of who we are and what we do. And it's also important to say that we have a very close collaboration with Cyprus University of Technology, DEPAC. And it's very important for us to start from scientific
from
scientific facts. So everything is scientific.
Backed up by science.
It's scientifically proved.
Yeah.
It's Yes, it's backed up by science, as Yota says. It's all backed up by science. Mm-hmm. Okay, and this was quite a new type of NGO for Cyprus, and I know the culture of becoming a parent in Cyprus was challenging, or was culturally entrapped, was it not?
How do you mean, like, we have to do what our parents told us and continue to raise our children in the same way?
No, it means that you have faith in your doctor and you don't ask questions.
Trust
the doctor.
That part. Yeah.
You trust the doctor because he's a doctor. He knows everything.
Yeah, and actually that's what our research in our previous project showed in Baby Body, where we looked into women's views of who do they trust when it comes to giving birth. And, midwives, they were very low. The role of the midwives has slowly started to become upgraded in the past few years. Yeah, to rise in the past few years. There's now six visits for every pregnant woman that she's allowed with a midwife.
And this is according to Yesi?
Yes.
According to Yesi, you're entitled to six. That's wonderful.
Yeah. They only pay like this, the co-payment is like €6 or something. So they're allowed to have these meetings with the midwife either before giving birth, or they can do some before and some after. So the midwife can also help with the postpartum period. And yeah, we're looking to slowly, as we said before, slowly change the perinatal culture. I mean, of course you have to trust your doctor. Of course there has to be a relationship of trust between you and your doctor. Mm. But we're here to urge people to ask questions so that that trust is actually based on real facts. And
but trust is, can I interrupt you, Arlene? Yeah. Trust is also earned.
Exactly.
So when you go to a doctor, you must trust him, of course, but there's got to be a point, you've got to ask questions. You've got to trust the way he answers you.
Mm-hmm.
So a doctor, you should trust your doctor, but he earns his trust.
Exactly.
He earns it's not automatic. He's got to, when you ask a question, he's got to answer you in a way that is comfortable with you.
And respectful.
He must listen to what you, and respectful, but he must be listening to your question.
Mm-hmm.
He must not be giving you the information he thinks is important.
Exactly.
Yes. And
okay. You're both also young mothers.
Yes.
That is also something, is all the board, yeah, are all the members of Birth Forward parents of young children?
No.
But a lot of you are.
Yes, most of us are.
You both
but
are.
We have women that they don't have children. And they are still involved because they feel that it's something that involves all women, whether they have children or not. All young people in Cyprus and our children.
What you're trying to do with Birth Forward is that we all, whenever we make a decision about our bodies, it's got to be an informed mm-hmm. decision.
Exactly.
Regardless of what decision we're making, it's got to be a decision based on questions I have, answers that the doctor is giving, what is available. So it's just building trust and having agency of my body.
Because a lot of decisions when it comes to becoming a parent are based on fear and on, you know, do as you're told and don't ask questions. And it's probably one of the reasons that we have such a high percentage of C-sections, that we have the findings in our RESPECT study that show similarly to other countries also in Europe and elsewhere in the world, that, you know, women feel disrespected during childbirth. So,
well, I remember I went through the IVF road. I mean, I'm much older than you, so I'm talking about 30 years ago. And I remember going to a doctor and him taking out a syringe and getting ready to give me an injection. And I said to him, excuse me, what is in that syringe? He says, no, you don't need to know. I said, excuse me, my body, it's going into my body, I need to know. And he was so surprised that I actually challenged him. But we're also talking about 30 years ago.
Mm.
So 30 years ago, and I mean, the combination of IVF being new then as well, and an older culture, I was so surprised that he actually asked him, and he was surprised that there came this bullshit young woman that actually had an opinion.
I think even today many doctors would be surprised by that question.
It's a very authoritarian system, like patriarchy system. You do as you are told, don't ask questions. And we need to change that because, as you said, trust should be earned through giving answers based on facts, on evidence, not just, the doctor should...
Not just on his word. Not just on his word.
Present you with evidence on the things you are asking.
Because the more, if he gives you answers, you will trust him more.
Yes, yes.
Or you will also feel calmer.
Or you will find, if you are asking questions that are not medically based, but how things are done and stuff like that, you may find that you like his approach, it clicks with you and you want to continue with them, or you don't match. So it's easier for you.
You know, one thing we do recommend women that they do before they give birth is a birth plan, which is kind of intimidating for health professionals, because they're like, oh, these hippies, they come here with a birth plant and they expect to be treated in such and such way, and birth is unpredictable.
What is a birth plan?
So a birth plan is, as the phrase says, a plan for what you want to happen during birth. However, it's not written in stone. It doesn't mean that, you know, what I wrote is that must happen and there is no other way. We always say a birth plan is a way for you to do your research and find out your options so that you know what you want during childbirth. I always give this very, you know, vivid example. I mean, how much time do women spend preparing the nursery, finding the perfect stroller, finding the perfect car seat? Oh, a car seat is very important, actually.
The perfect color for the wall of the nursery.
Exactly. I mean, and even, you know, I mean, and apart from parenting stuff, like you go, you want to buy a TV, you go, you do your research, you go to X many shops and you devote some time to that. So isn't the birth of your baby, which is actually, you know, how many times?
It's the most auspicious occasion
exactly.
of your life.
How many times are you going to do it? I mean, one, two, three? Isn't it worth your time and the effort to go and find out what your options are, and to know what the stages of giving birth are, and to have a plan B in case something happens? We always tell women that it's good to have a birth plan, but you must have also a plan B, because if things don't go the way you planned, you need to have a plan for an emergency cesarean. Because an emergency cesarean still can be a positive experience if you know what to expect. It doesn't always have to be traumatic.
Well, as long as you're aware of the fact that you want a natural birth, but sometimes if the baby is at risk or you're at risk, you've got to change the plan
exactly. So
that you and the baby survive. So if you know the thing in the context of emergency and not as the first choice, which is often the case in Cyprus,
even if it is the first case in Cyprus, we are...
Provided it's the mother's choice, not the doctor's decision.
Again, the mother's choice. As we said before, is that choice based on fear or is it based on facts? So we're not here to judge women if they opt for a cesarean because they are afraid. Because imagine, we live in a culture of fear. We are raised... In a culture where women are bred to fear childbirth. I mean, you go to the you're 8 years old. You go to the shops with your mother, and you see a pregnant woman, and they're all telling her, "Oh, my birth was so horrible. They cut me up. They did this and they did that." And you know, it becomes.
Something to be afraid of, not something to look forward to.
It becomes subconsciously
embedded in your mind.
embedded, a fearsome event. So you need to go a long way to first overcome the fear. And after you overcome that fear, if you manage to overcome the fear and you've managed to find support and knowledge to overcome the fear, then you empower yourself so that you... go out there and claim your rights.
Yes. And have the birth that you want, that you're comfortable with, and you feel is the best for you and your baby. Yeah. You wanted to say something, Jutta?
I wanted to say that even whatever you decide, even if you decide that a C-section is better for you, or if you have to have one, you still have options. Women, sometimes they don't know it, but it's very beautiful to have something even in your cesarean, like the music of your choice. Your partner with you, have the baby on you to breastfeed in the operation room, have support from a midwife, you know. Things like this can make for a very positive experience, even if you need or decide to have a C-section. And there are a lot of choices you can make that are not medical. You are not going to tell the doctor, use this medicine. It's not like this. That's not a birth plan. But you have a lot of choices that are not medical you can put in the birth plan. And also,
for example,
yes.
Because you mentioned non-medical choices, like by default, women who have a C-section are obliged to have their hands tied, like, you know, Jesus style.
Why?
Why? First, so that the health professionals have access to the veins, easy access to the veins. And second, because the health professionals are afraid that the woman will panic and that she will want to rise from the operation table, which is, of course, something very extremely, extremely dangerous. But if the woman is calm and she has support and someone telling her what is going on, she can, of course, have her hands untied and free. So she can be the first to hug her baby, even if it's just for
and
a few seconds.
And so that she doesn't feel like a prisoner.
Exactly.
And so she doesn't feel like a prisoner. That's
exactly. And feel empowered.
Punishment.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. There are even some cases of women-centered cesarean where the women wear some long gloves and they are the ones to, the doctors lower the plastic curtain between the woman and their abdomen, and the woman is the one to pull the baby up to her. I am not aware of anything like that happening in Cyprus yet. But we
this sounds a little bit advanced.
Yeah,
but
maybe,
it sounds
there are videos.
It will happen sometime
yeah.
in the future. Yeah.
That sounds actually awesome. Although you've got to have pretty long arms.
Pretty long gloves as well.
I'm just thinking of the movement. but to also get to the point of what's happening in with the organization, now you on the process of you towards the end of a project now, a co-funded project on respectful maternity
yes.
care. It's in you're doing it in connection, in conjunction with TEPAC, mm-hmm. the university in Limassol, with the Mediterranean Institute of Gender Studies, with an organized Rotha of Croatia, and the University of Genoa. Mm-hmm. Have I covered everyone?
I think.
And the Cyprus Patients Association.
Oh, yes, that's right. I knew I'd forgotten someone. And the whole intention of this was what? You did this project, it's a 2-year project. What was the intention of this project besides respectful maternity care?
First of all, to see what's happening in Cyprus, the bug ran a research on women's experiences. And both with questionnaires and focus groups. And we have heard the researchers heard women's stories about their experiences for maternity during pregnancy, birth, and postpartum. And it was a try to have evidence about what's the situation, so we can change it. We can find ways to change it. Yes, and we have seen, I think the results are similar to other countries in Europe. We have seen that there are experiences of disrespect during pregnancy and childbirth, or not listening to the women, not respecting their choices, and not informing them about what they are doing, like lack of informed consent, and even abuse at some cases. That was the first step, and the next, I don't know if Yoli wants to continue.
Can I just interrupt you here? And I think, Yoli, this is something we discussed earlier. You sometimes talk about disrespect, and you sometimes talk about abuse. Mm-hmm. Why the difference? What's the difference? Because, I mean, Explain to me, why do you use the word differently?
I think it's different.
Okay, first of all, there's this... sorry, you go, Yodam.
No, I just wanted to... It's like different points in one spectrum. Because it's not always, and you don't always see like abuse, like the doctor slapping the woman on, or saying, I don't know, shut up. You will not see this very often, but you will see if the woman wants to have her partner with her, or the mother, they can say no. The room is too small, or especially, I will say about COVID, because during COVID, they didn't allow anyone with the women, so they didn't have support. It's so, yeah, it's a lot of things. Or they give you medicine or substances without informing you. They don't allow you during birth, during labor, they don't allow you to eat or drink. So yeah, it's different spectrums, and I think Yoli has even more to say.
I agree with Yoda. Basically, the term obstetric violence is was let's say coined. I wouldn't say coined. It was started in Latin America, where this phenomena are very high. And it's like more than three decades old. And when people think of violence, they think of sexual abuse, verbal abuse, physical abuse, discrimination. Whereas the RMC, Respectful Maternity Care Framework, which on the other end of the spectrum would be disrespect in maternity care, is oftentimes interchanged with the word mistreatment, disrespect and mistreatment, so as to describe the suboptimal practices of what Yoda referred to, feeling disrespected, feeling unheard, feeling that you're a number, having people come in the room, in the labor room, without acknowledging who they are, having people give you treatment without explaining the pros and cons of this treatment, infantilization of women, being treated as a child, that means being treated like as a child, as what you described before, the IVF doctor. Oh, you don't need to know. I'm the doctor. I will do it. It's a very, very common practice to see that in maternity care, and we don't see it very often in other aspects of healthcare. It's very interesting that it applies this much to maternity healthcare.
Okay, let's. I understand. I think there's also disrespect, and respectful has a different slant to it, especially in the eyes of the mother and father and the doctor. I think it's gentler and it's easier to apply if you use those words rather than if you use the word violence. To be honest,
exactly.
That's also the way
this program Respect has had from the beginning the scope of bringing together all the stakeholders. We don't want to work against the stakeholders.
Anyone.
And yes, so it was a very conscious choice to use the positive term respectful maternity care and instead of obstetric violence. Respectful maternity care is not just a general feeling, a general sense of maybe things should be a little different. It's very specific guidelines by organizations that are very well respected in this field, the World Health Organization, the White Ribbon Alliance, and they are very specific in what they contain and how they will be implemented. So One of the scopes of RESPECT was to bring stakeholders together and discuss the current situation in Cyprus, which, as Yoda mentioned, was researched with questionnaires and focus groups, and together with all the stakeholders, bring together guidelines that can be implemented by healthcare workers, by in the healthcare system, to actually improve maternity care in Cyprus for everyone.
You're at the stage now that you're preparing a report, I'm assuming.
Yes, yes. Our CEO, Margarida, and the project coordinator, Nikos Middleton, are on it 24/7. Yeah, maybe not 24/7, but yeah, they're on it.
Yota, I think you wanted to say something earlier. Or was it my imagination?
No, a few things. I think it's very important that with respect, we are trying to bring everyone to the table. We need health professionals to work with us to realize the issue and find guidelines, solutions altogether. We don't want to come and say this is what is going to happen and follow it. We need the health professionals to be part of the solution. And the other thing I wanted to say is that we'll have our final final meeting of RESPECT.
Event.
Yes.
It's okay. It's late. We're all tired.
It's the 27th of March in Nicosia. And
this is a meeting of all the parties involved.
Yes,
the parents,
I think it's
the healthcare professionals.
To public.
Oh, yes. I think I got an invitation.
Yes.
I think I got an invitation.
So you are welcome.
And this is where all the findings will be.
Yes.
And nice to meet you in person. And this is where all the findings will be presented.
Yes.
The findings have actually already been presented.
Yes.
In some international health conferences.
Forum.
And there will be, of course, publications in peer-reviewed journals from the findings of the questionnaires and the focus groups. The final event will be, yeah, bringing again all the stakeholders together, seeing what announcing the deliverables. It's also all the partners are going to be there from Croatia, from Genoa. We're going to have some very
high profile
guests. Dr. Arul, who was the former president of FIGO and is now working at the is now teaching at the University of Nicosia. So FIGO is the International Federation of Gynecologists and Obstetricians. They will be there. We have representatives from the International Midwives Confederation. So in terms of healthcare, you know, it's an all-star, I guess. So it is open to the public. If anyone wants to come, there's information on our website and social media.
Tell me, the findings that you have, is this going to be used as an advocacy tool? Because technically you want to get the healthcare federations to be putting a lot of the stuff that has been recommended into place. Is any of that is that the intention of your project, or is that the next step?
We have very intentionally partnered with Cyprus Patients Association in this project, and we will continue our collaboration with them. So through our collaboration with Cyprus Patients Association, we of course plan to bring all this forward. The main point of the RESPECT project is to come forward with one of the deliverables is to come forward with the guidelines. So we give the guidelines, and which have been formed by all the stakeholders through the meetings that we have had. And hopefully things will start to change once the guidelines are in place. So the findings have been used so as to adjust the guidelines, and of course we will continue to push for more health communication education. So it seems that there's a lot of need for health professionals to be trained in communication skills.
Can I ask you something? How cooperative did you find the healthcare professionals? Was there resistance for them to participate, or were they very willing to come forward?
Yoda, we leave that on you.
I think there was some resistance. I think in the first meetings, in the first events, there have been a lot of some, at least, protest about the terms, about that the women don't know and they can't judge their decisions, and they don't understand why something happened, things like this. But I think in the latest meetings there have been a bit of more of cooperation, let's say. At least
it's always a challenge when people are in power or think they court professions. It's always difficult for them to actually accept the fact that they are doing what they know best, but there is room for improvement. There always is room for improvement. And they don't like to be put in a position of, well, I've been doing it wrong. Mm-hmm. They don't look at it as something as, I can improve what I'm doing.
And sometimes that it's difficult to accept the agency of the woman, and of the patient, let's say, because each of us, sometimes, most times we know our body, we know when something is wrong, when things going well. You can feel it because you feel the difference in you, in your body. And sometimes it's difficult for women to communicate it as well. And it's difficult for the healthcare professionals to accept it.
To believe them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the fathers? Were the fathers also equally engaged? Did it take long for there to be a space that they could come out? Because sometimes men consider that it's not their decision to make.
We very consciously did not include fathers in the focus groups because we wanted to have women express themselves more freely rather than, them buttoning up with the presence of men they didn't know. We kept the focus groups with women only, and the questionnaires were also answered by women and not their partners. However, during COVID there was this big surge in involving partners that is very selectively still applied in clinics. Like, there is no policy to cover the issue of birth partners in the clinics. Some clinics allow them, some clinics encourage it, some clinics are very strict and will do anything they can to prevent partners from, being there. The same goes for C-section.
Why is there a challenge to letting a partner be? Doesn't the partner in the room usually mean your patient is calmer?
Yeah. Well, sometimes it also means that they will be, filming. Okay. They will be
disruptive, maybe.
Yeah. So they want to, healthcare professionals, they're taking all the all the caveats maybe that they can, like all the precautionary measures. But yeah, you're absolutely right that a birth partner has been shown through scientific research that is very crucial for a woman to feel more at ease and relaxed, and it even reduces the length of labor.
Yeah, and cesareans. Mm. It has been found to reduce cesareans, to have a reduction in cesareans when you have a birth partner with you.
Okay. Are you planning a project after this one to follow on from this project? Or am I rushing and you haven't thought of it
actually,
yet?
Actually, there is one. There are two. I think one is like the continuation of Respect. It's called Respect Watch. And during Respect, we realized the need for a systematic and documentation of complaints, because there's no system to report complaints and anything related to maternity care. So Respect Watch is the next project that has been running at the moment. And the main goal is to create a program. It doesn't come to my mind.
A platform.
Okay. Okay, so that we actually give credit where credit is due, we need to say that this project was funded by the EU through the CRV 2022 Daphne program. So that we need to know. I've got it written down.
Exactly.
Okay, so I'm assuming.
We should mention it, of course, yes.
Yes. And the scientific director of this project was Nikos Middleton, Associate Professor Dr. Nikos Middleton from TEPAC in Limassol. Mm-hmm. He was the scientific director of this project. Mm-hmm. We need to give credit,
of course,
to the people that made this happen. The money and the guy in charge. Mm-hmm. The guy in charge.
Yeah, this project, and generally, we're very grateful for our collaboration with TEPAC and Nikos, especially Nikos, who has been the head of this program and also of our previous programs, Baby Buddy. There's also many respectful health professionals in our scientific advisory board, Urania Kolokotroni, to mention, Dr. Lenya, who's a midwife in TEPAC. Ne, Hatiorgiou, sorry. Andreas Mavridis, the gynecologist, is also a member of our scientific advisory board.
Okay, we're coming towards the end of this conversation. Is there anything either of you want to say in regard to this project and to what happened during the project, or do you think you've covered everything?
I just like to, point some of the messages that we want to bring through. It's very important for women to start to know their choices, to be empowered, both the women and their birth partners, so that they can actively take part in whatever choices they have during the perinatal period. Let me just I will close with this short acronym that is used to help women know their choices when the childbirth is there, and health professionals are coming in and they're saying you need to do this and you need to do that. So there's this acronym that women can use, and it's called the BRAIN acronym. I'm not sure if you're aware of it. So
no, I'm not.
when a certain intervention is suggested. So let's say, oh, this labor is not moving very fast. We need to speed it up. Yeah, so we'll give you some oxytocin. And then most of us are, out of fear, will say, okay, whatever you say. But in order not to let fear seep in and make decisions based on having all the facts, you need to use the acronym BRAIN. So B is for benefits. So what are the benefits of me using this intervention right now? R is for risks. What are the risks of me using this intervention right now? A is for alternatives. Is there anything else that I can do apart from oxytocin? I is for, there's disputable, but what I is. For me, I is an instinct. Or maybe it's information. Do you need more information to make this decision? Or maybe you do. What does your instinct tell you? And N is for no. What happens if I say no? Can I just say no and maybe wait an hour or two? So if you can answer all of those questions, you're one step closer to achieving birth as you planned it, respectfully.
So it's benefits.
Risks,
alternatives,
information instinct,
and no.
Yes.
Okay, so this is what you should be thinking of when you're at a crossroads.
Yes, yes.
When suddenly something changes and the doctor wants to do something, take five, answer these questions, benefits,
and
risks,
ask the doctor these
alternatives,
questions.
Instinct, information, and no.
Yeah.
Yes.
Maybe it's also good to implement that in our life in general. But,
It actually sounds, I was just about to say that it sounds like a good thing when you're in a panic, motor panic, take five and ask yourself these questions.
Okay.
Thank you, Yoli. Yota, is there anything you want to end with? Or are you, as Yoli covered you?
She did, but I just want to say that with respect, it has the researchers, Birth Forward, the CEO, they have done tremendous work. And I personally feel it's so much needed in Cyprus. And it's the first start at least the word respectful maternity care is heard. And health professionals are aware of it. And it's a start. And I really hope we reach the point when our kids are having kids that we don't need to talk about this because it will be the normal.
That's what we're fighting for.
Yes.
But I agree with you. I think the fact that you chose respectful is really important, and I think it's really important to remember that within this process, especially within this process of something as auspicious as having a baby, respect, especially for the mother and the baby, is prime. Health professionals and the parents need to work together.
Because for the parents...
The parent has to... Sorry?
For the parents and the baby, it's like what you said. Maybe the most special day in their life, the most unique experience. For health professionals, it's another day at work. They need to remember that what they do, it's like not fixing a car. It's people that they are having the most extraordinary experience in their life.
As you said, for the health professional, it's another baby being born. But for that specific couple, it's a new life. It's a new family member.
It's the start of their life.
I can't think of it, a lot of things. So I think I like that. I'm going to remember that, Yoli. Benefits.
Risks.
Alternatives, instinct or information, and saying no.
Yeah.
I like that. I think that's a good life motto. Ioli and Yota, thank you very much for being here. I think we leave here reminding everyone that maternity care should always be respectful, both the doctor to the patient and the patient to the doctor, because this is a new life coming into the world and there's nothing more important. And we look forward to perhaps attending your event on the 27th.
We look forward to having you there, Nagba. Thank you for having us here.
Thank you for the invitation.
Okay, thank you, ladies. And to the listener thinking, that's nice to see you, Yot, and I look forward to meeting you in person on the 27th.
Thank you very much.
And to the listeners, thank you for listening. And to you two ladies, have a good night.
You too. Bye.
Good night.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus, Island Talks. Open, diverse, free.